Hey, Fidelity. Can I get a second opinion on stocks in the Fidelity app?
With Fidelity, it's easy to get an outside opinion from independent experts in a single score.
And then?
When you're ready, trade U.S. stocks and ETFs with no commissions.
That's right.
I am always right.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and a retail Fidelity account. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the keynote by CNBC Events. I'm Sharon Epperson, CNBC's senior personal finance correspondent. On this podcast, you'll hear in-depth, candid conversations with executives, experts, and thought leaders. Today, a conversation with Roger Ferguson, president and CEO of TIAA. He joined me at CNBC's Inclusion in Action event on March 18, 2021. As one of only a handful of Black CEOs in the Fortune 500, Ferguson shared his unique perspective on how companies can diversify their workforce, increase opportunities for employees and customers, and promote financial literacy to make capitalism more inclusive. Here's our conversation. When you think about inclusive capitalism, Roger, what does that mean to you? How do you ensure that business leaders, government leaders, civic, academic leaders are all included in trying to make a more equitable society?
Well, thanks, Sharon. It's a pleasure to be with you again. And so the question of what I think of when I think of inclusive capitalism is that I think of two things. One is the economic pie itself grows. And secondly, that the benefits of that economic pie are spread relatively much more inclusively across society. So let me give you an example with some statistics. The number of people, percentage of the population that is in the middle part of the income distribution has declined gradually over the last 40 years from about 60% of our population, the adults live in middle income houses, to about 50%. Importantly, the share of the income that that group gets, that middle income group gets, has also declined, but from about 60% to about 40%. And so that suggests that capitalism itself, while the society has gotten bigger, the economy has gotten bigger, the benefits are not spread evenly or equitably across society. So when I think of inclusive capitalism, I think of a society that is both benefiting, but also has a much more equitable distribution of the benefits.
Excellent. When you are thinking about TIAA and what you've done in your tenure there, growing assets under management from about $435 billion to $1.2 trillion, how have you ensured or tried to ensure a more inclusive environment for your clients and for your workforce?
Oh, thanks for asking. So with respect to our workforce, we have been very focused on inclusion, diversity, and equity for sure. It starts with our hiring practices, where we want to make sure we see diverse slates of individuals, across the organization at all levels when it comes to the application pool. We've also made sure to increase the diversity on the hiring panels so that individuals, when they come in, are looking at a full panoply of individuals in their interviewing process that are also quite diverse. We think that will lead to better outcomes. We've also focused in on training in the organization. We have a training process called Journey to Inclusion, where we think about how we make sure that all of our managers understand what it is to lead diverse and inclusive teams. And then we have a full range of employee resource groups, we call them business resource groups, so that all voices can be heard, at the table. And what we found, particularly this year and last year, we've gone through, dramatic social upheaval, is the fact that we have been very, very focused internally on inclusion, diversity, and equity has paid rewards. We have seen a very large increase in the engagement of our populations, of our 16 to 17,000 employees. And so, running a diverse and inclusive organization as best we can, we think has been beneficial for everybody. When I think about what we do, externally for our client base, our participants, as we call them, first and foremost is really the effort to make sure we have good performance for them when it comes to returns. And so we see that our mutual funds, for example, are always among the best in terms of return. Barron's recently published its profile of the best mutual fund complexes. We were number 19, I think, for last year. But more importantly, for the last 10 years, we ranked number 9. And so we focus then on trying to get the best returns that we possibly can. And then obviously, we bring to our institutional clients our learnings, our knowledge on diversity and inclusion to help them benefit from what we know as well. And so those are just some of the things that we attempt to do.
That is a lot. And when you're talking about your participants, how important is financial education, and what in particular has TIAA done to really advance financial education to make a more inclusive group of participants for your company?
Thanks for asking that question. So financial literacy is incredibly important for everybody in America. We know that those who are more financially literate tend to have fewer problems with debt. They know that they tend to save more. They understand the importance of more investments and a diversified portfolio. What we've been doing is trying to use both modern techniques and other techniques to help people become much more educated. For example, we have a website called FinSites that is really geared towards financial literacy and financial education. We also have been partnering with Savvy. Our population, the folks that we serve, tend to be in the higher ed, not-for-profit sector, as you well know. Those individuals often benefit from the possibility of government support or repayment of their or forgiveness of their student debt. But that process is pretty complicated. So we have partnered with Savvy to help many of our participants take advantage of the student debt repayment capabilities that are available for individuals in the not-for-profit sector. So those are just a couple of examples of working hard to increase financial literacy among our population, the participants that we serve in the higher ed and the not-for-profit sector more generally.
When you were talking about making sure that you have a diverse slate of candidates, that hiring managers are told that they must do that within the company, how do you do that exactly? Is there a certain percentage or number of the candidates that are seen that need to be from diverse groups? And how do you make sure that that happens?
Well, we make sure that it happens because the panels are put together by our HR colleagues, our people team, as they're calling themselves. They do the recruiting, and they know from top down that they need to bring forward for the business leaders who are doing the hiring a diverse slate. We have an aspiration for our company to look as much like America as it possibly can. And so that will obviously drive, you know, what the portfolios of individuals that come forward look like. But it really is incumbent upon the people team, our HR leaders, to make sure they bring forward the kinds of diverse slates that we're looking for.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
I'm sure you're aware of this McKinsey study from last May that looked at diversity in the workplace and specifically asked respondents who had diverse leaders at their company how included they felt in the organization versus those who had non-diverse leaders. Those that had diverse leaders at the top felt much more included. Those whose companies participated in inclusion type activities or fostered that also felt more included. With you as a Black CEO at this company, do your employee surveys show that employees feel more included than perhaps they did in the past? What are your employees telling you about the significance of having a diverse leader at the top?
I think what our employees are telling us, we call them our associates. Our associates are frankly telling us that they absolutely want to see a diverse leader at the top of the organization. That gives them obviously a sense that we are a diverse organization, but more importantly, I think, or as important, they want to see actions, not just, you know, sort of one or two individuals. And so when we had the George Floyd murder last year, with the leadership of our inclusive and diversity team, we drove forward a program called Be the Change, which included, you know, a book club, reading a book around racism in America called Small Great Things by Judy Picou. She came to talk to us. We had a race against racism where we encouraged people to do a race, a walk, some sort of activity, socially distanced as appropriate, but with somebody else to talk about these topics. And as I said, our most recent survey showed, you know, quite a nice pickup in terms of engagement. Importantly, to your point, some of our populations that may have be underrepresented, African-American women, for example, underrepresented in the workplace in general, and in society, as we know, have had particular challenges during the pandemic. Our African-American women was among those that felt sort of most engaged in the organization. And so I think there's really, you know, a direct correlation between not just having diversity in the leadership ranks, which we do, but also having a company that acts appropriately around these challenging times and these topics. That seems to have been one of the things that has driven us to have a greater sense of engagement, and particularly with minorities, underrepresented minorities and women.
I am sure the Black women at your organization, your associates, are feeling extremely powerful at this moment as TIA makes history in having two Black CEOs, one succeeding the other. The announcement that Tsunda Duckett from JPMorgan Chase will be the incoming CEO May 1st is something that is historic. It has not happened in the history of the Fortune 500. What is the significance of having Tsunda Duckett in that role, and why is she the right person for the job?
Well, the first thing to recognize is that Tsunda Duckett is a well-tested business leader from JPMorgan Chase. She has led two of their businesses quite successfully, including most recently their very large and strategically important branch network. She is a quick study, and she knows how to manage at scale businesses. So the first thing to recognize is not what's so visible and obvious in terms of gender and ethnicity, but what's very, very important is that she actually is a superb business leader. Then you add to that the other components that you've talked about in terms of gender and race. And indeed, we have made history here, having, you know, one Black CEO succeeded by another. Having the third ever African-American woman leading a Fortune 100 company. And we also happen to be the only Fortune 100 company that has had three African-American CEOs. My iconic predecessor, Cliff Warden, was the first African-American CEO in a Fortune 100 company. And so there are many ways in which Tsunda Duckett's appointment is historic. But I also want to emphasize, you know, beyond what one can see in terms of history, she's the right leader in large part because she's a superb business executive, and she also embodies, you know, who we are in terms of inclusion, equity, and diversity. So I'm really excited to have her be my successor, and I look forward to welcoming her on May 1st.
Excellent. Your board also, of course, had a very significant role in this selection, and the fact that your board is 50% female, a number of underrepresented minorities on your board. How important is it to have that type of composure, or that composition, I should say, at the table to make decisions like who the next CEO will be?
Well, you're absolutely right. The board selected Tsunda Duckett. I did not choose my own successor. And I think it's important. We know it's important to have diversity of view on any board. Without diversity of views, including gender, ethnicity, also experience, you risk having what's called groupthink and perhaps not the best outcomes if everyone thinks exactly the same way. I'm also struck by the fact that there was a McKinsey study, another one that showed that companies that are very diverse in the top quartile of diversity tend to outperform those in terms of profitability in the bottom quartile by, I think, around 35-36%. And so while we talk about diversity in the boardroom, and we're proud of it at our own company, and talk about diversity in the workplace as being the right thing to do, Sharon, you should also recognize that it actually is economically a smart thing to do from the standpoint of business. There are more and more studies that show diversity in the boardroom, diversity in the C-suite, lead to better performance, both in terms of profitability, stock market performance for public companies. We are not one of those, obviously, We're a private company, but there are many ways in which diversity is both the right thing to do and a smart thing to do.
That brings us to a question from one of our audience members who's asking about whether or not you support mandatory quota-based diversity and inclusion requirements, such as the one the NASDAQ is seeking to implement. And if you do not, what alternatives do you suggest to ensure that there's diversity and inclusion from the top down at large public companies?
Well, I think the NASDAQ requirement has triggered a very, very important conversation in America. If you tie it to what we know about the risk of groupthink, as I said, and what we know about the economic and financial benefits of more diversity, I think we're, you know, on to the right set of topics. At my own company, at TIAA, we have been using our power as a shareholder to ask questions of the nominating and gov committees on our boards, the boards of the companies in which we're an investor, about the diversity in the boardroom. A couple of years ago, we went not to the top largest companies, but to the medium-sized companies and push them for and engage them on the question of gender diversity at the board table to very positive results. And we are also actively having those similar conversations around race as well. We're probably going to be in a position where we'll use our voting power, the ability to vote for or against directors in a way that enhances the message that we do want to see diversity at the board table. So regardless of how the NASDAQ rules play out, I think an important element of all of this is for institutional shareholders to use their votes for and against directors, particularly NOM and Gov chairs or lead directors, to drive home the message that we want to see more diversity in the boardroom. We think it's absolutely the right thing to do for moral reasons and also for economic reasons.
We have another question from the audience. This one comes from Howard Woolley at and he is asking, what are your thoughts on strategies to get non-participants in our economy to feel included, to feel like a stakeholder in the success of the country versus being an outsider without a personal investment in making our society better? What are your thoughts?
I think that's a really important question because we have seen in our society that if individuals feel as though they're closed out economically, they may feel closed out politically as well and may want to make dramatic changes to the way society works. I think the most important approach to all of this is first and foremost just to recognize that we actually do have an income inequality challenge that has been getting worse over the last 70 years. We have a dramatic wealth inequality challenge as well. I've seen statistics that show that the average white family is somewhere between 6 to 10 times wealthier than the average African-American family. We know that median income for African-Americans is roughly 60% that of our white colleagues. And so the first step is just to, you know, look at the data. The second step, I think, is to think about what are the policy ramifications and what policy steps, you know, can be taken. I noted positively that the most recent stimulus bill from the Biden administration, based on the reading I saw, looks as though it can have a major impact on reducing child poverty in America. So there obviously are policy solutions that will make people feel more included. And then finally, as I said, you know, businesses, you know, stepping up on these topics as well, making sure that they are, you know, doing the best they can to hire broadly diverse portfolios of individuals, and making sure that people have a chance to rise appropriately in their organizations. So I think there's an opportunity based basically on analyzing the facts, making policy changes in the public sector, and then having the business sector also play its role as a producer of jobs and as a producer of wealth.
Roger, in the final few minutes that we have left, you know, I'm sure as you retire from your role at TIAA at the end of the month, there will be many people seeking your advice on diversity, equity, inclusion at their companies and many other topics. And all this you're supposed to do in your free time, perhaps. But I know that you also likely have other plans. And I want to ask you what those are. What are your next steps? What are your next plans? And could they include being part of President Biden's administration?
Well, I'm retiring from this job, but you're right to say I'm not retiring from the workplace. I intend to be, you know, very active. I will stay involved in questions of corporate governance, including diversity in the boardroom, by being on various boards. I want to get involved in issues of financial inclusion through mainly fintech activity, leveraging technology and financial elements. And vis-a-vis government roles, I would say it's really up to the Biden administration to see how they, if at all, think they might use me either as an advisor or otherwise. But I'm at this stage very, very focused in on finishing up my role here at TIAA and then opening up the next chapter. And I'm looking forward to the opportunity to continue to be relevant and involved in all the conversations, similar to the ones that we just had.
That was Roger Ferguson, President and CEO of TIAA. We spoke at CNBC's Inclusion in Action Forum on March 18, 2021. The keynote is produced by the CNBC Events team. For more information on upcoming CNBC events and how you can join us, please visit cnbcevents.com. I'm Sharon Epperson. Thanks for listening.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.